Are you wearing Polaris pajamas?
I am.
I was repping the global services game.
Eats, breathes, sleeps.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 559 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Fosma Moon and Mr. Seth Miller. Gentlemen,
good evening.
As we fall back this year.
Yes, damn it.
Yeah. It's been a fun run in the summer and now we're into the true fall and winter. So
it is what it is.
I don't know. Someone down before 5 o'clock here.
I'm not a fan. It's like 4:30 here right now, and it's getting dark. And I'm like, This is ridiculous.
I'm with you.
So we need Connecticut to agree to move to Atlantic time, and the whole of New England. We have a compact that we can all move, but Connecticut never will because of New York.
Really?
Yeah, like Connecticut, Vermont, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine, and Rhode Island, I think, had like a compact plan where they were all going to try to move together, but they'd only do it if all of them would do it.
Huh. I know we've been trying to do something with California and with Washington to try and stay on, daylight or savings time?
Pretty much stay on, yeah. Yeah. Summertime is.
What is it? Tell me that. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of the time change. Not a fan. Talk about AA Globe Card Companion Cert Value. We talked about the new AA card last week, right?
And we got a comment from a listener that I thought was worth discussing because I sort of blew it off in our original conversation. But one of the things, the gist of it was we undersold the value of the companion pass.
Okay.
And if you're good at using, you know, planning and this and that, you know what your schedule is going to be, your trips are going to be. You can take good advantage of finding decent inventory on relatively high priced tickets to use a companion pass on.
Okay.
At this time. Right. I say that because Alaska, right, historically with their companion pass, that's been one of their biggest selling points. But a few weeks ago, they quietly changed a bunch of the terms. So among other things, you can't do open jaws anymore.
Really?
Yep.
That sucks.
Yeah. I don't have any cards that include these, mostly because the airlines I fly don't do them. And so I'll say inexperienced in the process. The extent of my experience is listening to my dad bitch about trying to get those flights lined up when he tries to use them on Delta. Because my mom, I think, has the card. I don't know. Whatever. But, yeah.
So does that mean, I'm guessing this means, like, what the listener means is looking at something like Thanksgiving travel well in advance, you know you're going to go somewhere, and booking that a year out using this companion cert and getting pretty good value for it because it's a fairly expensive ticket.
That's the impression I got. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Okay.
I think if that works for you, that works for you. I'm generally speaking that's not the way I roll.
Yeah. I mean, some of these airlines have started introducing like blackout dates for those types of things too. So it makes me wonder if in the future that's what it becomes because they don't want to give the high value stuff away. I could see AA going that way for sure.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, right? If you think back, this goes back a ways back, like Continental and United and a couple other airlines would do discount vouchers through different programs. One was like the entertainment book. But one of the carve outs they always had was they would limit the discount from hubs.
Oh, yeah.
So Continental, like you could have a $300 voucher, but at a hub, it was only worth $50 if travel included to or from the hub.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. They want to pick up connecting traffic randos, not hub captives.
Exactly.
Yeah. They don't want to give the hub captives the extra bonus.
Right. So it's only a matter of time till those types of restrictions sneak in.
Yeah. I mean, Alaska's kind of already doing some of that, right? With some of the promos that they're doing. Like they restrict certain airports for certain promos. You and I were talking about this, Foss. So I could totally see them doing something like that for certs as well. Mexico. Let's talk about some new topics. The JV. Delta, Aeromexico.
It's dead, Jim.
Well, so the JV is dead, but now there's a lawsuit pending saying that the government didn't, you know, do something and so they should be able to keep it. But separate from that, in the midst of all of the most recent round, I think I'll say 6 or 7 weeks ago, the DOT told Mexican carriers that they had to file schedules. And I think we talked about this a little bit back then. And filing schedules basically means tell us all the flights you operate in advance, and it's a precursor to the DOT, like, effectively doing a line item veto, going through the schedule and saying, no, you don't get these. and picking and choosing which ones those airlines are actually allowed to fly. And in theory, right, there was open skies between the U.S. and Mexico, but so the U.S. going back and saying no on some of these is a big deal. And last Monday, I think the DOT published its ruling saying, actually, no, we're blocking 13 routes, including a Mexico City San Juan route that was scheduled to start the next day. And the Mexico City Newark route that was scheduled to start the following weekend. And they just killed them. And then there's 10 or 11 other routes that were scheduled to start before the end of the year that have also been cut. And the U.S. government has said, and oh, by the way, if anyone tries to launch any new routes from either of the Mexico City airports, the real one, MEX or NLU, I think is the other one.
Yep.
You can go ahead and assume we're going to say no.
What's the reasoning?
It's tied to the same issue of U.S. carriers don't have fair access to Mexico City. And it's partly the other one is there's a cargo component to it, which is what sort of really drove this is a couple years ago now when they were trying to trim capacity at MEX. Was it Juarez? Benito Juarez?
Benito Juarez.
When they were trying to trim capacity there, the Mexican government came in and said, you know what? If you're an all cargo carrier, you got to move. We're moving all cargo out to NLU, the alternate airport. We're done here. And they gave 108 days, which was later extended by either 20 or 40. I forget which. It was in the filing. But they gave them 108 days to move all of their operations out. And so the U.S. government has filed a similar brief saying no belly cargo from Mexico City International Airport 108 days from now. Right. This is like we're proving how petty we are and that we're using the same timeline in the filing.
Or they used AI to write it.
Or both.
Yeah. You know, that's us. It's right. So there's no belly cargo. So this basically means no one can run belly cargo in and out of Mexico City now, which is bad for Aeromexico, but it's bad for like the U.S. carriers also.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. carriers carry all kinds of stuff in the belly as far as cargo, including the mail, some of them. So,
yeah. I wonder if mail is exempt because it's not considered cargo. It's a separate license, I think. But anyway. So there's the cargo side of things, and then there's the general passenger operations where like a bunch of slots got taken away and we have enough, like they're supposedly coming back now, but not until the next season cycle. And even when they do, no one can be sure exactly what times are coming back. And one of the big issues with like Delta and Aeromexico argued that Mexico City didn't really have that much demand because even when they ceded slots for their joint venture last time, no one ended up using them. And the counterpoint was like, or maybe it's because you only give us slots in the middle of the night, so you jerks. Right, it was like 3 a.m. departures and stuff like that. They were crappy times.
I mean, honestly, if Bastion is so concerned about this, maybe he should just go on television and talk about the shutdown.
But didn't he and Kirby go to the White House the other day?
Well, him and Kirby both went, but only Kirby was on camera.
Okay.
Bastion issued a statement.
Bastion issued a statement the day after they closed the Delta One security checkpoints.
Okay, they closed JFK in L.A., right?
That was the tipping point for Bastion to actually say something.
You got to simp harder, Bastion. It's not a good look. It sounds like this is a mess for everybody because if you're going to get rid of belly cargo, it screws just regular U.S. carriers too.
Yeah,
like trying to just do basic operations.
But who does it hurt more?
Arguably, Aeromexico
for sure. Yeah,
and I think that's the intent.
Right, and so. And it, right, like in the briefing, even the U.S. government admits, like, we know this isn't good for anybody, but we feel we have no choice because no one's listening to us. The Mexican government has responded, so we're escalating because we have to get something done. It is a weird situation overall.
I mean, Mexico, the Mexican government could go all in and just go, everyone goes to NLU. End of story, airport closes tomorrow.
Which that would be okay because then it's a level playing field.
They force everyone's hand. Yeah.
But what they're trying to do right now is do protectionism around Aeromexico.
But is it truly protectionism? I mean, I think it's appeasing Aeromexico to try and keep Mexico City open and appeasing even American carriers who don't want to fly out of NLU.
Right. But making the American carriers cede slots for and Aeromexico not have to cede much, that is protectionism.
Fair. I mean, but okay. So then we argue that Japan is using protectionism at Haneda.
Yes.
No. Yes and no, right? Because you could say they only opened it after they only opened it to non-local countries after they added the runway.
Okay,
right.
Heathrow's using protectionism for BA.
Of course, but the difference is no one's taking something away.
Okay. Okay. That's the difference. That's a fair point. I feel like the difference here is everyone could just go to NLU and it's going to suck for everybody, or it could suck a little less for most people if we stay at Mexico City.
Yeah. Right. Or they do something like some of the other airports, right? Where you can only fly up to 100 seats out of Mexico City.
Okay. Yeah. Like some kind of
smaller. You'd make only small planes there or only large planes?
Only small planes.
Okay. Like, Subang.
Yeah, London City.
The other Kuala Lumpur airport.
Yeah, or like London City.
TSA airport.
Billy Bishop.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of see that.
Not even jets. They don't even do pit size. If you had a 120-seat prop jet or prop plane, you could take it out of Billy Bishop.
If the runway is long enough for it.
I won't give them any ideas. I don't want to sit on a 120-person prop plane.
The ATR XXLR.
Oh, God. We can go transatlantic with this baby. Yeah, I'm really at a loss. I mean, I think Mexico kind of screwed themselves a little bit with all of this, with the new airport falling through, falling back on NLU as a option, and then now favoring Mexico City by punishing other airlines. But then I think the response from the U.S. government is kind of just bizarro world.
What do you do if they're not responding? If Mexico's not responding and addressing it, what do you do?
I don't think Mexico knows how to respond.
But they took action to begin with, so they know how to take action.
Yeah. I mean, if I was Mexico, I would move to NLU. I'd say, nope, we're done, and just move everything to NLU. Just make it, pull the Band-Aid off and do it.
Glad Stephen's not in charge of the Mexican government transportation department.
Why? You don't like NLU?
No.
I mean, at this point, it's a reasonable way of getting...
I don't think it actually has the capacity to move all the flights there today.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm looking at the gate numbers. It's like 20.
One through six.
Yeah, it's like 20 gates. Maybe a little less.
Are they all actually operational yet? Because
doesn't look like it.
It's not big.
One half of the airport is operational, basically.
Okay. They'll get there eventually. If they wanted it to be the main airport, they could. You could do Reagan, Dulles, LaGuardia, JFK, whatever. Billy Bishop, Pearson. There's all ways to do it. Hell, Trudeau and... Mirabel was supposed to be that at one point in Montreal.
Yeah.
You could absolutely pull it off, but I think to the point we've made here, like, you got to do it for everyone. And at some level, if you only let small planes go there, you effectively kill the connecting hub option. So it's not actually appealing for Aeromexico to stay there. Unlike Dubai is another one, Dubai versus DWC, where no one wants to move. And every time they've tried to move everyone or anyone to DWC, Emirates was like, hey, y'all go have fun. We got our airport here. And everyone else is like, no, we're not moving 40 minutes down out into the desert if Emirates gets to stay downtown.
But I mean, it's similar to JFK LaGuardia, right? There's a bunch of stuff into LaGuardia that doesn't go into JFK. And right. It probably would take just as long to get from LaGuardia to JFK as it does from Benito to NLU.
It'd be way longer, Max, by that.
Nah, nobody beats Van Wyck.
NLU is further than you think. Like, the new airport that they were building was very close to Mexico City Airport.
Yeah.
To Benito.
Choosing to kill that, and I understand there's like $5 billion on the line, but choosing to kill that was...
bad.
A choice.
Yeah. I mean, the other option that Mexico has is, and we've spent way too long on this, but the other option that Mexico has is to say mea culpa, and we screwed up, and we'll be better about giving out slots, and we won't take things away from people.
And that's theoretically what they're headed back towards, but they're doing it slowly, and no one knows when the slots are going to come really back.
Let's talk about American Airlines 321 XLR. They have posted the schedule for it. First route, JFK, Edinburgh.
First international. First real flight is a couple weeks prior. December 18th, JFK LAX.
Okay.
On AA3, I believe. It's like the 11 a.m. departure. So that one will be, it'll run domestic a little bit, break it in, get through the teething pains. And then as they get a couple more frames from March, they're going to do Edinburgh.
And I mean, it's good. It's a seasonal route.
Yeah.
You posted some notes in here. I didn't realize this, but main cabin extra is only available at the exit row.
Yep.
That's kind of weird.
How many PE seats do they have on those?
12, I think.
So
three racks of PE.
So is PE all the way to the exit row, and then main cabin, there's one row of MCE, and then the rest is coach?
No, I don't think it goes back that far.
It's like row 11, 12, and 13 are their premium economy, and then 14 is main cabin extra, and then everything behind it is just regular.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it looks like.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. No, yeah, pause. You're right. It goes to the exit row. I thought there was more, but yeah. So that's more or less the same as JetBlue's in terms of where extra legroom starts or where premium ends on the JetBlue 321LR, right? JetBlue has it all has 24 suites instead of 20 and 12, and JetBlue doesn't have the premium economy, but basically the first row of economy is that exit row.
Yeah.
Okay. So in that sense, it's similar. The lav at the back, or half row across from the lavatories in the back, is going to suck. That 34 DEF.
What are you talking about? It will suck. It will be terrible for everybody.
Even a stink shield isn't going to help you there. Alto slightly narrower because the tail curve and maybe a half window. No, thank you.
Yeah, it's rough. It's
just like the, in that sense, it's just like the 789, right? They got rid of, as they went premium, they got rid of main cabin extra because they have quote unquote real premium now.
I mean, 2.2 is nice for sure because it's gonna be like domestic F, but I bet the premium on those seats is probably $1,000 or more above economy.
I think the premium is gonna be what the market supports.
Yeah. Which might be
substantial, right? How many PE seats are from JFK to Edinburgh? Because JetBlue doesn't offer it.
Right.
And Delta doesn't offer it.
So. Delta does.
I think they don't. Doesn't Delta do a 7.6?
Do they do it? Right. It's a 7.6. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Remember, Delta won't put single aisles across the Atlantic because it's a brand new thing.
Yeah. Just the worst. Like Foz and I said, just the worst seat in the fleet. They'll do that. Just no single aisles.
But you get two rows.
And then Condor is cutting more flights in the U.S. So they announced a while back, when we talked about it, that they were going to stop flying DWI, Phoenix, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and San Antonio.
Yep.
And then just recently, I think it was 2 days ago, they said they're not going to do Frankfurt, Miami anymore. I can't figure this out because to me, it always seemed like Condor had these very niche routes in the summer that were like three or four times a week that the market supported. But to me, this says something else is going on at Condor. Like, if you can't make Frankfurt Miami work in the summer, that's bizarre.
I always thought Miami was a winter route for
fire.
Either way, I think what's surprising to me about MLL, both surprising and vaguely maybe explains it, is maybe they can't make Frankfurt Miami work, or Frankfurt any of these markets work really, because a lot of it was feed.
Yeah. And they just don't have
Frankfurt, but they needed the other half with the feed from Lufthansa, and they lost it, and then maybe there's a lawsuit, and I don't know where that all ended up, but I think we're seeing that continue to be an issue.
I mean, but Condor now has significant, or not, I shouldn't say significant, but they have decent connectivity themselves.
From their own short haul stuff.
Yeah.
And how much of that, though, is connectivity versus, like, are they running flow or are they running just other leisure destinations within Europe?
I mean, some of it's like they run like domestic German routes. They run like other European routes I wouldn't call pure leisure. Yeah. It's not like Las Palmas or anything. It's like Paris or...
you just look at the route times and stuff to see how much of the connections work, but
yeah, I just think they're struggling with some of your connectivity point is very true.
Yeah.
But I think they're struggling with something. Maybe it's just people coming to these states or getting enough people in Frankfurt to make those routes make sense. I mean, coming back from Portland, the flights were full, so I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah.
Lounges. Southwest is apparently building a lounge in Honolulu.
Their first lounge in Honolulu.
Their first lounge. Their first lounge ever. Anywhere.
I don't get it.
Don't you know? They're a legacy carrier now, Foss.
But don't you think you'd open your first lounge at your home airport?
What's their home airport?
Love?
Well, I mean, it's a good guess.
Like, lounges generally are driven by people who travel a lot. Honolulu is more the occasional traveler.
True. Unless they've just got that much traffic going to Honolulu that they think it justifies it.
But I don't think they do.
Yeah.
I mean, Seth could get the statistics, but I don't think, they run a bunch of flights, but I don't think it's that many.
Departures at Honolulu?
Yeah, number of seats.
I'll pull it up. Hamburg and Munich are, or two cities. Hamburg and Berlin are the only two cities that have like an inbound that seems to align with Alonso Transatlantics for Condor.
So then I think your point stands. It's feed. I just think it's weird. I'm with you, Fuzz. I think Honolulu's weird. I think a lounge in general is weird. Like, what would you open at Love? Like, Love is such a tiny, and I shouldn't say it's tiny. It's a big airport, but it's a very easy airport. And so it is kind of like LaGuardia.
It is getting more and more chaotic in there, though, with like bigger planes and everything else.
True. But it's like one of those airports where you could show up 25 minutes before boarding and just take your time. And it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Honolulu is not that complicated of an airport.
No. I'm not saying. I'm just saying, are people going to Love Field to hang out at the lounge? I don't know.
And Honolulu is way spread out. And Hawaii, and going to run through every name here. Southwest does have a certain amount of connections there. Southwest, by next June, will have the second most seats at Honolulu. For what it's worth. 372,000 seats for the month. Arrivals and departures. United's at 300,000. Hawaiian's over a million, or Hawaiian / Alaska is just over a million. But
don't worry, United will throw a couple more of 777As on it to make sure Southwest doesn't take that spot
between the islands. Right?
Yeah, exactly. $3 to go between the islands.
Yeah, a new island hopper just for you. I mean,
that sounds interesting.
I'm intrigued by Southwest's diving into Honolulu so emphatically. Like, I mean, I guess it does fit the name. It's very Southwest. But like, it's weird. Like, why double down on this market that is so far removed from the rest of your operations?
Well, I think they went in there because Hawaiian was weak.
Yeah.
Right. And the question is, are they attempting to continue to exploit that?
Mm-hmm.
Alaska Hawaiian still weak?
Alaska Hawaiian is weak. I mean, it got so bad that they hired Accenture to fix their IT problems, which will only make them worse.
It doesn't. Yeah. When they sent that out, like, the CEO sent out an email saying we're getting Accenture to help us. That does not instill confidence in me as a flyer. Well, I'll wait for the app to break next week. And
it's great. Now I need to go find a new airline.
I guess a lounge, if you're connecting traffic to the other islands, it kind of makes sense.
And Fuzz, I mean, you mentioned lounges are for frequent travelers. I would argue at this point, especially as Southwest makes its transition to more of a legacy carrier type operation, lounges are for premium credit card holders. And they sure as shit want those to show up.
But how long are the connections in Honolulu? I mean, the one thing about Honolulu is if you're connecting on Honolulu, you probably want to be on the concourse because it's nice.
True. It's nice, but people like their free stuff, especially if they have a credit card that gives it to them, as we well know.
Unfortunately. All too well.
And then other lounge stuff. Marriott. There's a name I didn't expect to talk about lounges about. But they're talking about putting airport lounges in. Skift had a story on this.
Yes.
What?
Well, I mean, what better place to put lounges when you're pulling them out of the hotels?
What are they putting instead in the hotels? What's there? Nothing? Rooms?
There's a lot of hotels that lose lounges and then go through a renovation and never get them back.
Yeah. So the CEO was being interviewed. He was at a thing in the Gulf in
Abu Dhabi, I think.
Yeah, Abu Dhabi. And it was a global forum. And he said, you know, this area is a huge market for potential lounges in airports, and basically hinting at them Marriott putting lounges in the airport. I mean, I guess.
Free access for Titanium. Everybody else can pay us $50. Like,
oh, God.
Do you need a hotel reservation, though?
I can see tying it to that, actually. Why not? Right. You book a hotel with us or whatever. Like, your upgrade is you get free access to the lounge on departure on your way back out. Why not?
It's not a bad idea. I think we're getting to a point where the whole airport's just going to be lounges. And, like, oh, do you need a sandwich? Well, that's a $50 lounge that you need.
I mean, aside,
I'd be happy. I'm almost happy about that because I don't spend any time. I spend less time in the lounges now because the terminals in some cases get quieter. But
yeah, I was going to say at this point, I tend to spend more time in the terminal than I do in a lounge because the lounges have become so disastrous.
Yep.
The Chase Lounge in Boston, they keep the crowding almost manageable. I've also never been there when they've had to wait at the front door, so which I know it gets to.
Yeah, does Boston have a Centurion as well?
I don't just think so.
Okay.
It's just Chase. And there's like an Air France has a lounge. There's a bunch of airline lounges. I think they're building a Centurion.
Okay.
And there's a club somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Isn't there a club in C?
There was out at the end of one of those piers at the Fingers. I don't know if it's still there.
Okay.
I wonder, like, the Marriott thing, if they were to do something similar to this, if they actually put lounges in airports, would it be a credit card? Do you think it would be like one of those things that's tied to a credit card like Chase or Capital One or American Express? Because they don't really tout their card that much. I don't even know that it would say it's marketed.
Do they have they do have a premium card.
They do have a premium card. It was an Amex at one point.
I think it's still is.
Yeah, so there you go. That's how much I know about it. I
thought was with Chase.
No, I thought they split. The premium business went to Amex. Isn't that what happened? And the non-premium business went to Chase?
I think that's what it is, because I had the Amex for a while when it was Starwood. So
yeah, you can get a Bonvoy Boundless or Bonvoy Bold from Chase, and then a Bonvoy Bevy or a Bonvoy Brilliant from American Express. You've got to be effing kidding me. Or you got to be being kidding me. I don't know, like
Bevy.
Yes. Up to 17x total Marriott points for every dollar spent at hotels.
And the redemption rate is terrible.
Yeah, we're like 2 stays away from Linnea making lifetime platinum. And I'm like, great.
I mean, I got lifetime platinum. I'm like, why do I have this?
$650 annual fee for the Brilliant card.
So I can see them giving lounge access for that.
I mean, it includes platinum status, though. So there you go.
Oh, so you don't have to even stay. Who cares?
I mean, like, the question is it going to be like, are the lounges going to be tied to United given their partnership? Is it just going to be a room inside the United Club?
The Marriott room?
Nah, no way.
Or it'll be like the old United red carpet clubs, right? The lounging area by Westin?
Oh, yeah. You're really going back. I mean, maybe it's like a JetBlue thing. This is JetBlue's lounge entry. We've partnered with Marriott.
Nah, JetBlue's building their own. They're actually starting construction.
Oh, that's good. Lastly, let's talk about some shutdowns. So I was reading today TSA wait times and we're recording this on Sunday. TSA wait times at Intercontinental Houston were around 3 hours for about 3.5 to 4 hours. So by the time the lines cleared themselves, that wait time had gone down to like 90 minutes.
So as a little bit of background, like, if I remember correctly, the security checkpoints in C are closed, right?
C is closed, A and E are open.
Which I don't understand.
Was C closed prior to the government shutdown?
No.
No.
Okay, so they've closed it to consolidate staffing.
Yes.
But C is like the busiest of the three.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
And B's closed. There's no lobby in B right now.
There's zero lobby in B.
I guess, I would look at it as C is United only, whereas E is United plus a whole bunch of others, and A is United plus a whole bunch of others. So if you're dealing with people who need to check bags, it makes the most sense to have C be the one that's closed. You put your staffing in where you can handle everybody, not just one airline.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a traveler, it's a tough choice, because if you're going to C and you go to A, you could be stuck out there. Like, it's like if the train stops working, you're screwed.
Not necessarily. Well, yeah, you're right, because it's just the one train. Well, I mean, I imagine they'd run buses in that case.
Hopefully. But then if you're in E, it's you can walk. Everything's connected.
Right.
Except A.
Okay, so go to E. This is an easy choice. I've solved it.
There you go. Okay.
Except there's a lot more people at E.
Yes. I think with the construction, I don't know how well that terminal's handling that many
people. It's not. A is the way to go.
Except you got to take the train.
You have to rely on the train.
Listen, I mean, we saw Friday night, maybe, or Saturday night, like a massive number of staffing triggers for ATC.
Yeah, it was like 30, not, right?
Yeah, it was bad, right? People, they're not getting paid. Like,
You know, theoretically, they're going to get their back pay eventually, but you got people that were need to find money to pay their bills. It's not surprising to me to learn that, you know, some might be taking extra time off to work somewhere else, or just the stress of all the extra forced overtime and needing a sick day. Like, it's a bad situation. I will say the most awkward part of it all was when asked about, like, is this making things less safe? The Duffy's Secretary of Transportation Duffy's comment was, I mean, you know, obviously we're going to slow things down if we have to keep things safe, but, you know, like, you can't really say no. He did not inspire a lot of confidence there.
Is that what he said?
It's something like that. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, and then on top of that, we've seen the ATC triggers. I think at one point on Friday night, DFW was running their entire operation on the east side of the airport because they could not move things on the west side because there was not enough staff to staff both runways or both sets of runways, which put DFW wait times on the taxiway around 2 hours. So planes were just sitting there shutting down and waiting. I don't know, unless something happens, I don't see this getting better. Like, I think people are going to start taking more time off if they're not getting paid. And if this extends to Thanksgiving, I think Thanksgiving week is an absolute disaster of a week. And I don't want to be anywhere near it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see any positive, right? I don't see if you tie in security delays plus ATC delays, I think it gets to a point where it slows the entire system down and people just, it grinds to a halt at some point.
Yeah. That is one of the big risks. It's like, it only works if it actually keeps moving. And as you slow things down, you can absorb some of that, and you start slashing things and you cut things out and you sort of make it work. But overall, bad news. The actual quote question, should Americans have safety concerns about flying at this point? Answer. That's a great question. We work overtime to make sure the system is safe, but we have to be honest. Does it add more risk to the system? Sure it does. We don't want crashes.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Feeling good. About to get on my airplane home. Thanks.
I got 11 tickets booked for this current week, Wednesday through Sunday, of which I plan to fly 6 of them. So we'll see what happens.
Is this part of your 25?
Yeah. If things go well, I finish out at the end of this weekend.
Nice. And then you're traveling over Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah.
Are you at all worried about that?
No, because I'm flying JAL, leaving the country and getting out. So
you're like, worst case, get delayed, leaving a little bit. And I sip some nutrition.
And I'm going the weekend prior to Thanksgiving. I'll be gone for Thanksgiving week.
Okay. All right. Foz,
I'm actually not even sure my trip counts as quote unquote Thanksgiving travel by all statistics.
Foz, you're going to Pakistan, aren't you?
Sri Lanka and Pakistan.
Over Thanksgiving?
Over Thanksgiving.
Oh, God. I'm glad I'm not traveling with you, for sure. Like, you don't have a great track record.
Yeah, Sri Lanka's a great place to visit. I've never done Pakistan. But
No. I'm talking about his track record of actually, like, being on time.
My track record's fine, except when I'm with you.
It's the same for me. My track record is great, except for when I'm with you. I was actually going to say, you know, Foz and I were looking back at, we were trying to figure out, because there was a trip we had where Foz and I were going to Taipei, and Foz was like, where were we going? What were we doing? And I'm like, I have no idea. So I had to, like, go back in my emails to find the reservation. And it happened to be a trip where my United flight to connect to the same flight that Foz was on out of San Francisco from Portland delayed to where I would misconnect. Then, and they wouldn't let me on when I got to San Francisco, even though the plane was parked at the gate, they wouldn't let me on the flight and told me to pound sand when I said, rebook me on the next Ava flight. All of that to say, Foz's flight, the original San Francisco Taipei, was delayed so badly that they let everybody off the plane, and Foz canceled and trip invaded it.
And so you ended up in Taipei?
No. We just went home.
We both went home and then did it another weekend.
All right.
Yeah, it was good times. So, all right, we're going to talk about Connect Airlines. It's back. I had no idea. Virgin Atlantic's going to fly to Phuket. Virgin and Alaska are in a little bit of a tizzy with a lawsuit. Some bad flight timings. Orlando to Tokyo. Seatgroup, we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then Eastern Airways shutting down. So stick around if you're a Patreon subscriber. If not, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.